Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
This is a Lip Media podcast.
You're listening to Queers, a podcast about politics and culture with Simon Copland and Benjamin Riley.
Was that your tummy gurgling in the middle of that sentence?
I don't think so. Maybe. Maybe it was. My tummy. I don't know.
Oh, anyway, doesn't matter. I will cut that out.
It's the 11th of April, 2019. I'm Simon Copland.
And I'm Benjamin Riley.
Welcome to Queers. Each episode, we talk our way through questions on a theme, and this week, we're talking about body image.
We have recently joined Lip Media, an LGBTIQ podcast network here in Australia, and super stoked to be on board with them. It's really awesome. We're very at home amongst the other shows on the network, and it's really exciting to be collaborating with them on all sorts of good things that we will have coming up over the next little while.
And another little bit of news is that we've started an Instagram account. if our Facebook account and our Twitter account aren't enough for you, go and check us out on Instagram. We're on Instagram at Queers Podcast. We've got all a bunch of great images up there as well. So go and check us out on Instagram.
Be on Instagram. I only joined Instagram for the first time last year. Yeah. I feel like, well, ever since
I started following you.
Oh, nice. I'm never really on it now. I always forget that I have it. But, like, ever since I left Twitter, you know-ish, I feel like I talk about this every episode. It's probably obnoxious. I should go to Instagram more. It seems like a friendlier place.
And Instagram
just people posting pictures of their cats and food.
You don't have ridiculous fights on Instagram. You just have lovely photos, and it's quite nice if you just want something to like. And if you follow people from around the world, you can get photos of different places. And sometimes it's cute dogs, sometimes it's hot boys, sometimes it's nice scenery. It's like a nice little mix.
I feel like I'm much more into feeling bad about myself because my life is not as good as other people than because people are yelling at me. I'll take one over the other.
Yeah, okay, well, yeah, you know, I'd choose that one.
Something that I also wanted to talk about, which I didn't actually flag with you before we started the opening of this recording, is that our Patreon, you know, we've been doing it for a while, and given that this episode is actually spun out of a conversation that we had on a Patreon-only episode, which you would hear if you subscribe to our Patreon, I think we need to, like, come up with some sort of a subscriber drive to think of, like, some sort of competition or, like, incentives or something to convince people to sign up to Patreon. Because, we're making good stuff, I think, on the Patreon-only episodes.
Yeah,
and it's just $5 a month.
Yeah, I agree. Maybe let's think about that. But I think, you know,
You don't want to pull anything out of your ass right now?
I'm not good at that kind of stuff. Okay. It takes me time to think about things.
No, me too. It's okay.
But for our listeners, you know, maybe this is just a little push to, you know, go and check out our Patreon. We have new episodes up there. We have extra content. We're getting better at posting stuff. You know, it takes a little time to develop this, but, you know, go and check out our Patreon because I think it's really great and it's really great to get the support of everyone as well.
Yeah, we do actually spend time and effort on putting those episodes together, so which is the whole point, that it is this kind of little bonus for subscribing at a particular tier. So go and have a look. For our latest Patreon episode, we had a discussion about body image in queer communities. We quickly realized, as the episode dragged on over the amount of time that we usually set aside for these things, that it was something we wanted to have a longer discussion about. So today, we thought we'd launch into it.
Our interest in this comes off the back of the release of Attitude magazine's Body Issue. an issue of the magazine apparently dedicated to celebrating the vast array of body types that exist in the gay community in this instance. Looking at the images, however, we could not help but notice a uniformity, buffed and slim muscle gaze.
The attitude example raised an issue that is frequently discussed within queer communities. There is a deep debate about how different bodies are represented within queer spaces, and also a growing recognition that parts of the queer community have significant issues when it comes to body image. So today, we wanted to examine body image in the queer community.
How are bodies represented within queer communities? Where do expectations of queer bodies come from? What impact do these expectations have? And what can we actually do about it?
Simon, this is often quite a personal topic. Do you have any experiences with body image issues within queer spaces?
I mean, I think nobody who is in a queer space probably doesn't. I'd be surprised if anyone doesn't. I think that it's so prevalent within queer spaces in a different variety of ways. And I think that's something I'd like to get into because, you know, we're both gay men and I think it's very particular in gay spaces, although there's varieties within that as well. But I think it is different across different elements of the queer community. And I think that there's something interesting about that it's worth talking about today. But yeah, absolutely, I have. The first thing I thought of when I was thinking about this question was growing up as a late teenager, I am a very hairy person. I've got lots of chest hair, I've just got hair everywhere, basically. I hated it. When I was a teenager, I hated it. I really, really didn't like having body hair. And part of that was just being a teenager. Like, I was, you know, getting hair under my armpits before anybody else was, and people liked to tease me about that. But I think part of it also started to, when I started to engage, when I started to sort of recognize my being gay, and looking at the representations of gay people, it just sort of wasn't at that time something that you saw very much of. It wasn't something that was celebrated. And I remember my first proper boyfriend, one night coming over to my place, and I think we had messaged beforehand, and he was waxing his back. And it was just like a 16 or 17 year old waxing his back.
Oh, wow.
And he was like, then came over the next time and he brought over wax because he was super keen for me to wax my back as well.
Oh, that's intense.
Yeah. And I got out of it that night. And I, you know, but part of me really wanted to do it because I hated my hair so much. But then I managed to sort of like get out of it at the same time. I, you know, I didn't want to do it right then or something like that. But I had this thing of wax that he left at my house that I sort of carried around for like a year. You know, but then I eventually just was like, no, that's not going to happen. You know, and we broke up pretty quickly after that. But, you know, I remember thinking about how much I hated my body hair and this sort of like pressure to get rid of it, you know, that existed. And I never did it. But I'm glad I never did it. But you know, it's something that sticks in my mind quite a lot. And since then, you know, I think that there's been some change in perceptions and, you know, hair is now kind of in, which is great for me. but, you know, I think that, you know, it was a good example. And I think it's actually an example of how body perceptions change a lot as well, because, you know, later down the track, I've become super comfortable with my hair and super comfortable with my hairy chest and all that kind of stuff. But I think that, you know, those kinds of things happen all the time in queer spaces. And it's, you know, to me, it's interesting about what drives that and how it changes across time, I think is super interesting. I mean, what about you?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, I've had body image issues really as long as I can remember. I remember being... So I'm very, very tall and have
I'm always surprised about how tall you are when I see you.
I know, totally. Well, like I think even people who see me in person a lot forget that I'm very... Like, I'm one of the tallest people I know. I'm 6 foot six.
Yeah, yeah. So, and I'm dating two tall boyfriends, and, like, you're taller than both of them. So, like, I'm used to tall, but you... Yeah. Anyway, I'm not trying to dig into your body issues here.
Well, no.
I mean, yeah. I'm just saying you are tall.
I am very tall. So, the height is part of it in that, like, particularly when I first started going to gay bars and or clubs, I guess, more particularly, I have always felt really like on a dance floor in particular, like everyone can see me from everywhere, which they can. I can see everyone else and I can't just like blend into a crowd. And it just made me feel uncomfortable about dancing for a really long time, about like going to those spaces because I just would stand out and always feel really self-conscious. The other, I mean, that's kind of one thing. I'm also, like, I have, like, some weight. Like, I'm not by any means, like, a big guy. Like, I'm not, like, fat. I don't think anyone would say that. But I have some, like, some fat on my chest and my stomach that I have, for my entire life, been self-conscious of and have been unable to get rid of. And I remember, even as a young child, like, I remember being, like, 10 years old and wearing jumpers in summer to hide my chest because I was like so self-conscious about it. I'm still super self-conscious about it. And I think it's always felt like I was interested when you said, you know, talked about being hairy and how that kind of, you were self-conscious about it and now it's kind of more in. I think part of the reason why I'm really cynical about the embrace of like big kind of hairy bodies as a positive thing is because I have a body that is has kind of never, and I can't imagine ever will be the kind of ideal body type within gay communities, in that I'm like tall and lanky, but I also have body fat that I don't like, and that is not attractive, you know? And so I feel like the paradigms of attractiveness might change, but they're still ultimately these kind of hierarchical, like it's still ultimately about a particular archetype, that people may or may not be able to get close to achieving.
Yeah, absolutely. I totally agree with you. And I wasn't saying that necessarily as a positive shift.
Oh, no, totally, yeah.
Just maybe a beneficial shift for me in some ways.
Definitely, definitely. Yeah.
In terms of, like, my own... Not in terms... like not, and I'm not saying that as, like, oh, it means I get, like, extra all this extra attention, but, I mean, in terms of my own, like, self-confidence, it sort of has been beneficial. And that's just me being honest. And I've thought about this before, about how, like, those shifts have, you know, we're now at a time where... you know, I think people are into gay rugby teams and, you know, the gay, you know, the sort of gay rugby dude or the muscle hairy dude. And I'm closer to that stereotype, although sure. I think that probably pushes me in some ways subconsciously to sort of constantly, you know, be wanting to do that more.
I was about to ask, how does that manifest?
Yeah, I don't know. Cause I haven't, you know, I think it probably does manifest in a way that sort of drive, yeah, I'm sure it drives me to want to do it more or to sort of lean into it, I guess. It helps for me that, I mean, I think that, you know, I did play rugby for a couple of years, and this is why I brought that up, because, you know, I really enjoyed that. But there's no doubt that part of that enjoyment, not the entirety of it, but part of that enjoyment was the, you know, the image in my head of being the gay rugby dude and the sort of perception I had of that. And I've spoken to a friend of mine who plays for a gay rugby team in Melbourne, and he has frequent complaints about players who will sign up to the team, take lots of photos of them being gay rugby dudes, and then never turn up to training or turn up to games. Sure. Like, you know, and, you know, players that he knows that, you know, they went overseas last year. And so they did, like, for a tournament, there's an international tournament that happens every 2 years called the Bingham Cup. And, you know, they would, you know, and so the team was selected and people who could afford to go, etc. And they did a photo shoot of players in their tops. And he was telling me about, like, people who wanted to like get in on that, you know, to participate in that even though they weren't going, you know. And that sort of, like, sure, perception, sure, that happens all the time of, you know, there's this sort of, like, desire to be seen being that person when you're not actually engaging in the activity, and I think that's totally true. And I reckon I could see that in the team that I was in as well, that the image of being a gay rugby dude was sometimes more important than playing the actual sport. So there's definitely, I think a push for, like, that is now the thing that, you know, that gay space is like. And that doesn't make it healthy either, because you're right, there's still a hierarchical picture. And, you know, what, you know, there used to be the, you know, probably the more slim gays, the small, you know, were sort of the archetype, and now that's changed, and now being slim and more feminine is considered not sexy anymore in sort of mainstream press and mainstream, you know, pictures of what it means to be gay. And now it's more hairy and buff dudes. And, you know, it changes, but it doesn't make it a good change. It just means that, you know, you have different people at the top of the pile.
I mean, I don't think that the changes are arbitrary, though.
No, I agree with that too, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think that in two quite different ways, this makes me really want to talk about masculinity, which is interesting because it's a topic that you and I have disagreed on in the past. But I think, like, I guess the first point about the kind of aesthetics of body image, like, it seems, like, I feel like in the past decade or so, maybe even less, there's been a shift, not just among gay men, but I think it's exemplified among gay men, of a, like, a kind of new masculinity, a return to a certain masculine aesthetic that is characterized by beards, by hair, by different body shapes, by even, like, I always think about the, like, hipster barbershops
are
just, like, fucking everywhere now. Or you know, maybe were, like, really massive, like, 5 years ago or so. There was, like, this big kind of, in Melbourne at least, there were just, like, there seemed to be a new hipster barbershop opening every week.
There's quite a few, like, in Canberra now as well.
Yeah, so it's just, like, guys with mustaches and aprons, like, shaving with a straight razor.
And really super expensive.
Super expensive. Yep. They'll give you, like, a beer as you wait and sit down. And it's
I go, like, to a place like that. No, I don't. Mine is more of a chain, but it's like they do give you a beer before you wait.
Yeah, sure. And I guess I find like the quality of the haircuts notwithstanding, I find that stuff really gross because it's just this kind of, like, it feels almost like this sort of Reddit style masculinity, but people not wanting to kind of call it that. Like, it's people kind of wanting to take on the aesthetics and the kind of bits of mess of that, like, what is in a lot of ways a really gross kind of masculinity, like, that comes from a time, you know, when men were much less conscious about how to treat women and how to treat, you know, people who were not masculine but take on all those aesthetics as a positive thing. And so to kind of go into those spaces and, like, what am I trying to say? I guess I'm trying to say, like, it seems like a way for men in the 21st century to try to claim to feel okay about a version of masculinity and couch it in a way that looks like it's just about aesthetics, but I think it's actually also about the kind of wanting to go back to the simplicity and power of a certain old school kind of masculinity as well.
Yeah, I see what you're saying. I can understand what you're saying. I haven't thought about it in that way before in terms of these spaces. So my initial reaction is I'm not quite sure. Because yeah, my issue with masculinity is always that I don't actually know what exactly it means. And I find it not a particularly useful tool in many ways, but the, you know, so taking that term away, what you're describing as a culture, I think is super true. And you think about those barber shops and they're super blokey, they're super, like, but in this kind of odd, like, I'm super progressive blokey kind of way. But
is it not, you know,
and is it actually like that? And I think that, but I think what's interesting about that is that how that exists, and that is not just a gay thing, that's a very straight thing as well, that, like, that crosses over those boundaries very clearly.
Yep.
And so what is it that you know, and this is where I think that there's some questions about body images, and I think, you know, we sort of frame this as body image, but questions about body in itself, you know, what is the perceptions of body in queer spaces, and how does that interact with straight spaces? Because I think that there, you can see those links, that it's not just beards that have it's not just that beards have become a thing in gay communities. They've become a more of a thing in community, in society in general, I think, at least in a place like Australia. And I'm not sure if that's necessarily true in other parts of the world, but it definitely is here. And so there's clearly connections there, and about maybe is there sort of a striving to be, you know, this is, you know, going back to some sort of assimilationist style politics of a striving to be sort of the same in some ways. I think that you could talk about masculine ideals of the desire to, you know, particularly the sort of the beardy, muscly dude is a desire to be seen as sort of that, you know, your stereotypical dude, because we are not like other people. You know, we are like other people. We want to be like other people. And so is that part of it? And is it a coincidence that has occurred at the same time as we've had a sort of a marriage equality politics that has really been about us being the same as straight dudes? And so, you know, is part of the body image stuff related to that, that politics? And I think that there's a potential in there. I haven't sort of thought about that in depth, but I'm thinking about it now, and I think that there's something that could be said about that as well.
Oh, I think absolutely. I feel like the kind of link to gay bodies and gay image, like, yeah, I totally see the kind of beard stuff and the kind of, and because it's more like beards are kind of like a nice symbol of it, but it's a lot more than that as well. It's all of the, yeah, I don't know, the kind of rise of bear culture and the rise of like it's a return to a kind of a gay masculinity of the 70s almost, with the kind of clone look of, you know, like leather and mustaches and muscles and all of that, that feels to me totally like this. We
very
are not
Tom of Finland.
Very Tom of Finland, yeah. That's very, and it, you know, it has a bit of a different spin, I think, in the contemporary era, but it is all about, you know, we are not feminine, we are not, we can be gay and also masculine. It's kind of the I'm doing a lot of reading at the moment for my research around, I guess, respectability politics, but like kind of normalizing politics in queer communities, and it feels very much about the kind of attempt to create a kind of gay identity that erases the visibly gay parts of itself.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Maybach, your premier destination for luxury resale. Elevate your style with our curated collection of bags, watches, and fine jewelry. At Rebag, quality is our priority. Each piece meticulously vetted and verified by experts, ensuring your investment is nothing short of perfection. Buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Hermes, Chanel, and Cartier. Access expertly crafted and hard-to-find pieces that redefine luxury. Your next investment awaits at Rebag. Get 10% off your first purchase with code REBAG10. That's 10% off the luxury you deserve. Don't miss out. Head to Rebag.com and enter code REBAG10 at checkout. That's REBAG10.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
And I think that this is where we can transpose it to the other parts of the queer community that aren't, you know, we two gays. And, you know, I have
we two gays, that's an alternative name for our podcast.
Yeah. I don't mind it, actually. You know, I have a couple of friends, lesbian friends, or, you know, queer women friends who, one of them, I'm not sure if she'd identify as a butch lesbian, but she talks about that a lot, about, you know, about butch lesbians and the sort of how there's kind of a slow erasure of butch lesbianism as a thing, and that there's an increased focus on the sort of feminine lesbian. And I think that, you know, that there can be, you know, it's a similar sort of assimilation, and that's politics of the, you know, the lesbian being feminine, the lesbian being, you know, tall, blonde, you know, beautiful, getting rid of that sort of picture of the lesbians being butch, because that is kind of crossing over the boundaries of what it means to be a woman. And that is something that it's sort of, again, is erasing the lesbian-ish, the lesbian, they're raising the lesbian out of the lesbian in some ways.
Yeah, sure.
And I think that that's very similar to what we're seeing in gay communities. And I think it's interesting because the dynamics are different. Partially because, you know, when we talk about things like the press, you know, we started with Attitude magazine as an example of this. When we talk about the press, you know, the press, you know, queer press is very gay dominated. So a lot of this imagery stuff comes from the press in many ways in gay communities. But, you know, I'm intrigued about where those sorts of changes in expectations or where those expectations or where those image stuff comes from in other parts of the community where,
sure.
you know, it's where it's not as dominant, where the press is not as dominant, where a lot of the spaces, you know, a lot of queer spaces are gay dominated. And there was the controversy earlier this year or late last year around Poof Doof in Melbourne, which had a lot of this sort of body image stuff, but again, a gay-dominated discussion.
Yeah, yeah.
But we see similar sorts of issues happening in lesbian spaces, certainly. And I mean, I think, you know, if we talk about intersex and trans communities, they obviously there's a whole range of different relationships with the body that exist within those communities
as well. Oh, absolutely,
yeah. Some parts of, you know, trans discourse and intersex discourse that is related to people passing and looking like a normal, in quotes, a normal person. And what does that mean? And what does that do to trans and intersex identities and how is that expectation to pass
sure,
affect
yeah.
body image and those
sorts of things? And I think that there are, like, those threads really... I mean, I'm not going to claim that it's the same for gay and lesbian people as for trans and intersex people, but I do think that there are interesting links. Like, the idea of passing is kind of across all queer people, I think, in one way or another. Like, passing as straight, passing as cisgendered.
Yeah.
And it maybe means different things, but I'm also unwilling to say that it's unrelated. I think those threads are absolutely there. So to go back to your example about lesbian communities, I feel like I heard a story recently that was almost the opposite from what you were saying, and that points to me to a lot of the complexity here in the queer reading group that I run. There we were talking about I can't remember what the text was now, but for some reason we were having a discussion about, literally can't even remember what the discussion was, but one of the
this is a useless group, story, Ben.
I know, one of the group participants, a queer woman, was talking about experiences she had had, particularly when she was coming out into lesbian spaces and being policed for not looking lesbian enough, that people would like at lesbian parties and things constantly kind of come up to her and accuse her of not, like, that she wasn't supposed to be there, which is something I found fascinating, and I think is something that I have seen. I think that gay men fetishize straight men too much for that to happen in gay spaces, like, yep. gay male spaces, because, you know, like, gay men just want to, like, you know, turn straight men and fuck them, so it doesn't play out in the same ways. But I do think that in explicitly queer spaces that this happens a lot. I think about it, like, at uni totally. All the time. God, like, I had so many experiences at uni that really kind of turned me against those spaces a lot, of attempting to go to queer parties or queer events or like anything that was slightly more kind of alternative, and that there was totally this kind of hierarchy of queerness, that the more kind of alternative you looked,
the more queer you are.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. And but yeah, like, absolutely. But like, aesthetically queer, you know, like, it's all about aesthetics. Like if yeah. you looked like you were breaking whatever boundaries, then you were more acceptable, and anyone who looked like quote unquote normal would be really judged in those spaces, which is, yeah, I don't know, which certainly felt shit at the time.
I have experienced that as well. And I think uni is a perfect example of it, but I think that there are plenty of sort of queer parties where this happens as well, where you go and you're not alternative enough, you're not queer enough to be there, or you're kind of judged for that. And I think what's interesting about that for me is it goes to that sort of final question we were asking at the start of this about, I mean, what can we do about these things? And I think that those people would say that this is that sort of changing, that their practices are as a response to this about, you know, accepting all bodies and, you know, accepting all desires and all practices and, you know, all aesthetics and sort of celebrating that. But I think that it actually in some ways then ends up creating a new hierarchy and a lot of these subcultures. And we, and sort of in the Patreon episode, you went on a little bit of a rant about the bear community, about how, you know, it just creates different hierarchies because, okay, now in the bear community, you have to be bigger and hairier and blah, 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 blah. In queer communities, you have to be, the more alternative are, the more queer you are. And if you're not that, then you're not queer enough. You're not trying hard enough. You're not, you know, deserve to be in that space.
So look, I've got to, like, I also don't want to make a kind of false equivalency here, because I, as much as I think that they're similarly shitty situations, I will state, and this is probably a realization that I've only come to relatively recently, or something I've been thinking about relatively recently, I 100% think that the, like, queer version of that is better than the other version. Like, I, by and large, have had much better, friendlier experiences in those spaces where a diversity of bodies and shapes and looks is more welcome than, say, like, like, I don't know, I had this experience over the Mardi Gras weekend, and obviously this is just, like, one example, went to this, like, very queer party that was so much fun. It was, like, one of the most, maybe the most fun I've ever had at, like, a queer party, and had a really great time. Everyone was very, very friendly, it was very, very mixed, lots of, like, people of all genders, all different ages, you know, it was great. And then later that night, I had tickets to another party that was more of a, like, bear party.
Yep.
And I got there and I was just like, oh, fuck, being in a room full of, like, really masculine dudes, if you are not that, is really awful, you know, like is really, like, people will just treat you like shit. So I feel like treating people badly because they don't fit a particular aesthetic ideal in any situation is bad, right?
Mm-mm.
But, yeah, I guess I don't want to say that those, like, queer spaces are, like, as bad as the kind of really hyper-masculine ones, for example, because I just don't think that they are.
Yeah, I think that's fair. And I have had amazing experiences at queer parties as well. Like, we went to the... I've just gone blank on the name. The ball in Sydney for Mardi Gras. We went to an event in Mardi Gras the week before at the Carriage Works. It's called the something ball. I've just gone completely blank.
No, I can't remember.
Anyway, and it was, you know, it was this kind of very queer event. It was based off New York balls and we had a great time. It was excellent. And I certainly didn't feel judged in that space at all. Despite the sort of normativity that the three of us presented in many ways. So I think that it can happen in those spaces. I think when it does happen, it can be, you know, a similar sort of hierarchical thing. I think it's less likely to happen in those spaces than it does in you know, and I think you're right that in a space like a bear event or regular game.
Maybe it's also, like, so many of the examples I can think of the reverse are, like, around uni. So maybe it's just about, like, kind of
student politics. You
know, people in their, totally. Like, people in their early 20s are kind of shit often around that sort of stuff.
Yeah, but, you know...
Like, it's a time when you're coming out and the stakes feel really high and you... Yeah, there's maybe more policing going on for that reason.
Yeah, that's potentially true. So, one thing that I thought would be also good to bring up quickly... not even quickly, but one thing I wanted to bring up is the question of race that plays into all of this. I mean, we've discussed... Have we discussed, you know, racial issues? I'm sure we have, particularly around... I mean, it's such a big topic in... Again, gay communities around, you know, dating apps where race is really something that comes out. I think it's the best example, and I've used best in a means of, like, it's the most obvious example of where racism is really rife within parts of the gay community, or the queer community more broadly, when you see sort of dating profiles that say no Asians and things like that, that awful kind of stuff. But I think that there is something about... how race plays into all of these questions.
Definitely.
I mean, you know, one of the things that I think I've read a lot about, for example, in the example of no Asians, or, you know, a sort of discrimination against the Asian community, is the the assumption of an effeminity to Asian gay men that then plays out. And I think that there's something about, you know, if we're talking about sort of the big muscly dudes, the picture of Asian men not being that and how that plays into both an internalized homophobia, but a racism as well. Like, I think that those two things
coalesce, or come across, sort of work together there.
And I think that's a, like, a thing we would be remiss to miss in this conversation.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think it's worth saying that, as always, when we're talking about hierarchies and archetypes, I guess, in as we have been throughout this conversation, those archetypes are white, absolutely. And I think that there are, you know, like, it's kind of gross to talk about, but I think important to acknowledge that there is a kind of racial hierarchy among gay men, that gay men kind of fetishize different races, people with different ethnic backgrounds in different ways, and that, for example, like Middle Eastern men, the kind of stereotype or imagined Middle Eastern men might be more able to fit in with that kind of masculine ideal. And again, I'm not talking about reality, I'm talking about the kind of imagined version of this person. Whereas, as you're saying, Asian men are coded as feminine by most gay men, whether that's, you know, whatever the fuck that means. And so they're automatically kind of excluded from an archetype, from a paradigm that places really a particular kind of masculine archetype at the top, which is really gross, you know, like this is as much about gender presentation and identity as it is about race and the intertwining of those things.
Yeah. And I think that it's interesting to, I mean, I'm really interested about how this stuff plays out beyond the gay, because I think that, you know, when we're seeing increased representation of, for example, very high profile trans people in our community, in sort of in the press, what is it that makes someone, you know, I'm thinking about people like Laverne Cox or Caitlyn Jenner, for example, what is the body image that they need to represent to be able to get that access to get to that space? And you know, and I pick out those two because you have the difference in race there. And, you know, I don't feel like I know enough about this to delve into it, but it's something I'd like to delve into a little bit more, maybe at a later episode, or we could do a bit more research about it around, or this might be actually maybe something that'd be great for an interview with someone who has a bit more knowledge in the area about representation of trans bodies in these spaces and how how race interplays into that. Because I think that those dynamics certainly play out, and that there is a need for a picture when someone of color does get sort of elevate, does manage to get to the top, that they have to sit into a particular picture, a particular stereotype, and they have to fit a particular mold. And it's much harder for those, for people of color to get into that space, and they have to do a lot more work, I think. And so those racial dynamics run across different elements of the community in very different but very similar sorts of ways, I think. And I mean, I think in gay spaces, it's so obvious because it's just the racism is so blatant in so many of the spaces and being discussed so much. But in other spaces, I think there's potentially more subtlety that exists in the discourse, or maybe there isn't. Maybe there's just other ways that I don't, you know, I'm not as aware of in many ways. But I mean, I'm sure, you know, we talk about trans women of color, of course, are people who suffer immense amounts of violence. So there's definitely obvious, very obvious experiences of racism that exists across those communities. But I'd be intrigued about how those sorts of racial dynamics play out differently and how different expectations of the body play out differently across different communities.
And I guess the ways that, I guess like different racial identities are coded differently in terms of gender and in terms of sexuality and like what is implicit in, you know, like the idea of the black woman is not just the idea of the black woman. It kind of carries all of this other cultural baggage that means XYZ thing about gender and means XYZ thing about, you know, I don't know, any other sort of like lines of power, which, I feel like is kind of beyond, certainly beyond my experience, but probably beyond my knowledge and awareness to talk about in much more detail.
Yeah, but maybe there's something we should, I think it's certainly something we should investigate and maybe find some great interviewees who could talk about that in more depth.
Yeah, that'd be great.
thank you all for listening. As we said at the start of the podcast, we're doing a lot of work on our Patreon, and we've just uploaded a new episode that is sort of was the starting point for this longer episode. The Patreon is going really well, but we'd really love some more support on it. There's new content. We're getting better posting new ideas. We've got some great ideas for future content that we want to post on there as well. So please go to patreon.com/queerspodcast and sign up. And it would be really a great way to support the podcast. Otherwise, if you'd like to get in touch or make a comment, there are multiple ways you can do so via the internet.
You can email us at queerspodcast@gmail.com. We're on Facebook and Twitter, both at queerspodcast.
And Instagram now.
Oh, and Instagram now. Also, we're just at queerspodcast on Instagram, are we?
We are.
Yeah. Okay, great. Thanks. We also have personal social media. I'm on Twitter at Ben C. Riley. Simon's on Twitter at Simon Copland. And he's also on Facebook at Simon Copland Writer.
You can also find the podcast on our website, queerspodcast.com. You can also find the podcast... I don't know what I just did there.
Well, I have it no sounded idea like you said queerspodcast.com.
Okay. Maybe I should just keep that. You can also find the podcast on our website, queerspodcast.com. Or subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts or whatever your other podcast, you know, feed where you get your podcast feed from. And please leave us a review and rating. It's a great way to help other people find us.
I have increasingly been using Spotify to play podcasts, which is nice.
Yeah, Martin uses and Spotify all the time.
We're on Spotify now, which we weren't for ages. But now that we're with the fantastic Lip Media, our new podcast network, they have helped us get onto Spotify. So you can find us on Spotify. It's very fancy. You know, so I expect that people should be listening to episodes so much that when the end of year list comes around that shows the top things that they've been listening to, we are right at the top, baby. So, I mean, that's a big ask because you'd have to just listen to the same episode over and over again. But I challenge you to do it. Yeah, so great, do that. Also, tell a friend. It's really the main way that people find podcasts because there are so many podcasts out there. And why on earth would you trust any sort of ad or anything that tells you something is good? Like, you basically just have to get someone that you trust and you know has similar taste to tell you that you should listen to something. So if you have someone you think would like the podcast, just make them listen to it.
Thanks once again for listening, and we'll be back in your ear holes in a couple of weeks.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.